This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It's 8 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Let's get into the issues of today as we talk about the quality of life survey. Right? What do we mean by the quality of life? And I know that this morning we sort of conflated issues. Quality of life, wellness, health, jogging, cycling. Yeah, that's at a personal level. But at a country level, we are talking socioeconomic development. We're talking about the breadbasket, the food index, the cost of living, the ability to work, the access to healthcare. The access to schooling, and that when all those variables come together, does it make living in South Africa a pleasurable experience? Okay, so the quality of life survey, it measures socioeconomic circumstances, perceptions of service delivery, psychosocial attitudes. I'd be curious to hear how those are measured, and the value base in a country, the things that make citizens feel seen, heard, respected, and safe in their country. We're joined by Dr. Stephen Gordon, Senior Research Specialist in the Developmental, Capable, and Ethical State Research Division of the Human Sciences Research Council. Also joined by Professor Alex van den Heever, who's the Chair for Social Security Systems Administration at the University of the Witwatersrand. So, Professor van den Heever, good morning.
Good morning.
And Dr. Gordon, good morning.
Oh, good morning.
And thank you so much for coming through. So let's start with you, because you're coming from the Human Sciences Research Council. And my understanding is that this is work that you have been doing for quite some time. What do we mean by the quality of life at country or national level?
Okay, so the HSRC's South African Social Attitude Survey has been measuring the quality of life in South Africa for more than 20 years.
Yeah.
So what do we mean by the quality of life? So when people talk about the quality of life, there's lots of different indicators. As you yourself mentioned, there's health, there's economic status, there's crime, the environment, there's community. Indeed, the number of indicators you could look at are endless. Tens of thousands of different indicators could go into this. So what we do at the HSRC is we simply ask people, are you satisfied or dissatisfied with your life as a whole? Are you satisfied or dissatisfied with your standard of living, your safety, your community, your options for the future?
Yeah.
Now, there are some who believe that human beings are incapable of answering such questions. Incapable of understanding happiness or sorrow, starvation or illness, that they are irrational. This is a very old and discredited idea, often termed the happy slave hypothesis. Decades of research, more than 80 years of work, have shown that human beings are capable of intelligence, of heart, of soul. That when they say they're dissatisfied or satisfied with life, this is a meaningful and powerful data point. Indeed, what the data shows is that many South Africans are dissatisfied with their life, dissatisfied with how life has changed over the last 5 years, and dissatisfied with how life will change in the future. Many people are unhappy with the state of services, with the quality of their democracy, with the quality of their communities, not only in terms of economic criteria, but in terms of safety, in terms of their ability to trust and relate to one another, and their ability to solve problems. And so when people express this level of dissatisfaction, we need to take that seriously. Human beings are capable of rational, meaningful dialogue, engagement, and thought. And when they tell us that they are dissatisfied with life, we need to take that seriously. And that's what we try and do at the HSRC. And when we look at the quality of life.
Okay, could I ask you about your methodology? So when you spoke to South Africans, who were they? Was it representative of the country as a whole?
Oh, of course. So this was a nationally representative survey, the highest standards. It's been conducted for more than 20 years. We have thousands and thousands of data points. Every year, about 3,000 people are interviewed in rural, urban areas, suburbs, rich areas, poor areas, black, white, young, old, men, women. It's perfectly representative and is able to give us an interesting and informative picture on how South Africans feel about their quality of life. Then we can put that against the massive reams of objective data that we gather in South Africa. GDP figures, crime figures, health data, and really get a sense of what's going on in our society and how best to improve it.
All right. So if from what I'm understanding, you say you've spoken to people, you've spoken to people directly, so they give you an answer. I'm satisfied. I'm dissatisfied. They give you their reasons. And then you juxtapose that to just general economic data. What is the state of the economy? What are employment prospects, healthcare access, service delivery? And then you match those answers to the general condition of living in SA.
Well, one of the things we do is we try and understand, you know, what predicts quality of life. So when you understand what predicts quality of life, you can really best understand how to make people's lives good. So one of the things that predicts quality of life in South Africa is economic status. So people have material resources, water, electricity, good housing, good job, then they feel satisfied with their lives as a whole. Right? They feel safe. If they feel they have options in the future, they're satisfied with their life as a whole. So we can really understand, yes, socioeconomic status is very, very important. We could also understand, you know, what else is driving quality of life? Because, you know, it's not just one thing that makes people happy. It's lots of different things. And one thing that's really challenging to South Africans is social trust. People feel they can't trust their neighbors. They can't trust their politicians. They can't trust people living in their community. It creates a lot of social isolation, a lot of paranoia, a lot of fear. And that's also bad for quality of life. You know, inequality is bad for quality of life, especially at the micro level. You know, we often forget about the importance of inequality when talking about quality of life. So these are the kind of research that we do, hoping to advise governments on how to make South Africa a better place. Right. Must understand the government has a lot of objective economic data that's given to it. They don't often pay attention to quality of life data, to these type of subjective, real voices that you hear from normal people in South Africa. And really, people should pay more attention. Quality of life data is very important.
All right. So, Professor Vandenheuvel, let's bring you into the equation. I've heard quite a few things. This is, for all intents and purposes, a happiness index like they do in the Netherlands and Denmark, the happiest countries in the world, because people feel safe, people see opportunity, people live in conditions that are very modern, and people trust their government. Not quite so in terms of this quality of life survey. What do you make of it?
Well, I think the first of all, when you look at what's the purpose of any kind of survey or data of this kind, is it to inform government policy? Is it to inform the public? And in many instances, this kind of information is very important to society, to also to basically look to government to say what it should be correcting. So many things are hidden. Many things aren't very easy to discern. And there are many, many data sets. You don't rely on just one. So the this kind of data can be very useful, seen in conjunction with other data sets like that give you a sense of sort of the practical world in which people are living in and the adequacy of it. But the subjective factors can be important, but they can also be subject to quite a lot of influences that don't really create a sort of a good indicator for what government should do. But they can give you an idea of the sense in which people feel that they are dissatisfied with their lives. And it might not relate to their sort of practical living conditions. So, for instance, if you had to survey the quality of life of people living in a prison, there might actually be the amount of money being spent on them per day might actually be higher than for most people in South Africa. Are they satisfied with their lives? Do they think it's a good life? Well, they don't really have agency. They might feel hard done by. They might have a sense of injustice, etc.
Okay. I don't know if we've just lost you there, Professor Alex van Heere. Okay.
Better for them. So the thing is, we have to look at all data, and the priority of government is to put people in a position where they can act on their, where they have effective agency to influence the life, their own life path. And if that is missing, it's extremely bad for people in any community or family.
Okay, so when you've used the analogy of the prison, I'm understanding you to say, you know, money allocated to prisons sometimes is even higher than what people are getting by way of, say, a social grant. But prisoners are not happy with their circumstances. So it's not about adding more money into the kitty. It's about how you distribute in a way that's meaningful and changes people's actual circumstances. And part of that has to do with the choices people are making and the environment that government is creating. Have we understood you well?
Yeah, so one is the ability to influence one's own life, ability to act on, so that idea of agency is very important. Mm-hmm. Can I make a change? So, for instance, I could have my income halved, and if somebody did a quality of life survey, it probably wouldn't make much of a difference to me. However, if somebody took my money, stole half of it, I'd probably be extremely unhappy and have a strong sense of injustice. Mm. So those are the kind of subjective factors that can influence people. So in the case of a prison, no agency or very limited agency. Mm. Somebody in a community who's actually got less income but has the ability and the capability to change and act on their lives might actually feel feel very positive going forward. But anybody who's feeling trapped, who's feeling that they are structurally held down, those people will be have a sense of you know, their perception of quality of life would be lower, and their quality of life will be lower.
Okay.
So it is actually important to put people in a position to be able to act on their lives, and that is a primary responsibility of government, which it's failing to do in many areas in South Africa.
Dr. Stephen Gordon, I want to bring you back into the conversation. I'm sure you've heard what Professor van den Heere was saying is, you know, when you say this data suddenly gives people a voice, gives people a face to express how they feel, and it's not just technical data, GDP at 0.1% or investments into infrastructure, we start saying, what does that infrastructure do for people? Does it improve the ability to access water or housing? That starts to be a more social component to it. But now we're talking agency. Can data like this really help to synthesize agency, capture what agency looks like for the government to make sense of it?
Well, of course. Well, let us take a very, very simple example, right? Your income. Your income gives you an amazing amount of agency in a capitalist society like ourselves to travel, to try new opportunities, to think about starting a family, to provide for that family. If someone halved your income, took away half your resources, that would have a massive impact on your freedom, on your ability in a capitalist society like ourselves to do things. Indeed, the reason that people are happy with money, right, has a lot to do with the security and freedom that money provides to the individual. People have expectations of where their life should go. They have expectations of who they are, their success, what they want from life, right? How many children do they want to have? What kind of job do they want to have? What kind of retirement do they want to have? If those expectations are not met, they are very unhappy. Right. Think about access to water and electricity. 50 years ago, many South Africans did not have access to water and electricity. Now, many do. But if that access is turned on and off continually, right, this constrains their freedom. They have learned to rely on water and electricity to lead a good, healthy life. And yet, if it's turned off every few days, every few weeks, this constrains their ability to live a good life and undermines their expectations of what their life should be. Therefore, is it any surprise that many people are dissatisfied with their quality of life these days, even though many material conditions, many units of measurement on a chalkboard will tell you that things are moving up.
Yeah.
Many people will tell you that things are not moving up. They feel dissatisfied because their freedom, their expectations for what life should bring has not matched up.
Okay, so let's just simplify this. Please help us. So technically, when the government, as implementers of policy, look at data, okay, they'll say, well, in 2024, more people have access to water and electricity. In 2024, we've got a middle class that's sizably larger than what it was in 1990. We've got more women in the workplace. We've got primary health care for free. So technically, things should be better. But when you speak to people, they say, yeah, even with all those things, I'm not happy. I'm not satisfied. I'm concerned about my future, my children's future. Yes, there could be affordable basic education, but I don't think the quality of education for my children is preparing them for the future. Yes, I may have a woman with more human rights, but I'm not sure I'm safe walking down the street. So no, we are not happy. And what the government is not understanding is why people are not happy, even if they've done what they need to do in 30 years to try to improve the quality of life.
Absolutely. And, you know, when people tell you they're dissatisfied with life, it's the onus is on us to try and find out why, what is driving that level of dissatisfaction. We need to respect people when they say they are dissatisfied. People are capable of thinking about their lives. We're constantly thinking about our lives and where we are, what we're doing. Are we happy? Are we sad? Are we making the progress we want to see? We have a lot of knowledge about ourselves, and we can use that knowledge to really understand why people are so upset. Because we should live in a society in which the majority of the population, I would argue the vast majority of the population, says that they are satisfied with their life as a whole. And we don't live in that society. We live in a society where almost, I think it is, the majority of the population say that they are dissatisfied with life as a whole. Here in KwaZulu-Natal, 60% of people say they're dissatisfied with their life as a whole.
Okay. Professor van den Heever, let's bring you into the conversation. To what extent do real structural issues like inequality, like race, like gender, like culture, like which part of South Africa you find yourself living in, to what extent are those variables for satisfaction or dissatisfaction?
So they can be in variables if they are in some cases made to be variables. So there's if people do react to a sense of injustice, if they feel they've been mistreated for any reason. So for instance, if somebody feels whites have an advantage and blacks don't have an advantage, and that's been and that's an unfair advantage that whites have, it creates a sense of a perception of grievance. That something's also been taken away. And income inequality just between rich and poor, between people who run businesses and those who are workers or people who are unemployed, that's if people feel that their position in life is because of the actions of somebody else, then they will feel a strong sense of injustice. Now, in political campaigns, that's often a key focus of attention because people try to ride those grievances, even if the structural reasons for people's disadvantage are not necessarily a result of those particular inequalities. So, for instance, in South Africa, the unemployment rates are unusual from an international perspective. And somebody can say, well, that's because of apartheid or that's because of historical advantage. And somebody else can argue that that's because government has basically failed in managing the economy and managing public resources effectively and efficiently. And so grievances are something that can create a very, very stark sense of injustice and are easily exploited. And the problem with that is that, in fact, the real things that you need to have done are then ignored, because it's always easier to write a grievance than it is to actually fix real problems. So this is also the problem with perceptions. People can be made to be unhappy because of a sense of injustice and miss the injustices that are actually happening.
Okay. Just to latch onto this issue of injustice, to what extent is, you know, this notion of complex interdependence, Professor van den Heever, at play? Complex interdependence, which is the government may have built a police station in my area, put up street lamps, and given us access to water, electricity, etc. But there are just hoodlums in the neighborhood who keep on wreaking havoc and have increased the state of crime. So the things to make me happy are there, but I live in a community where it becomes difficult to enjoy the things of happiness.
So absolutely. I mean, so the thing is that just bean counting public functions is not sufficient, because at the end of the day, you have to see improvement in the nature of the community. So let's look at the issue of what really does scare a lot of people. It's a sense of insecurity. And that insecurity can be in relation to income. It can be in relation to physical security. Mm. Insecurity worries people. It worries them every single day. Am I safe in my house? Mm. Will I have an income tomorrow? Mm. Probably about 90% of South Africa's population, even if they're earning an income, are worried about their earning throughout their lifetime. Mm-hmm. They're worried about their one paycheck away from being in mm-hmm. dire poverty and mm-hmm. circumstances. So that's too many people in that situation. That in itself results in a fragmentation of society. It causes crime to build up, because there will always be somebody who exploits those mm-hmm. vulnerabilities of communities right. and takes advantage of the people who are vulnerable. And that becomes the consequence. You go into a downward spiral, which we are seeing in many mm-hmm. communities in South Africa. And that is very much a result of government mismanagement, in that it hasn't actually focused on actually changing people's circumstances. It's been counted. It's provided the clinic, the bridge, et cetera. It hasn't maintained it. It hasn't necessarily changed the lives of anybody.
Okay. All right. Dr. Gordon, I want to ask you to make the final comment. There are some parts of South Africa which are said to have a better quality of life than others. In fact, in this instance, Tshwane or Pretoria ranks as the city with the highest quality of life, with a life index of 156.6. Johannesburg is close second, and then the figures then distill. That's not how people see it. People in Tshwane feel like they've got one of the worst municipal managers or the worst municipalities in the country. People in Joburg are concerned about rising crime and decay. And people in Cape Town think they live in the best city. So the figures don't match what people see on a day-to-day basis.
Well, the quality of life survey that you're referencing there is a composite survey. It's not the one that the HSRC does, and it's comprised of multiple different indicators. Mm. So what's probably happening there is that certain indicators are moving the scale one way and certain indicators are moving the scale the other way. Okay. So this is what I want to say about quality of life. So quality of life is obviously based on your expectations. So if your expectations are low and then they get better, your quality of life is going to go up. Secondly, very, very importantly, people are not only ergotropic. So they don't only care about themselves, they also care about the community, what's happening with them, right? So that's another important thing that predicts quality of life. And of course, thirdly, and very, very importantly, evaluations of the functioning of the state and how well the state is functioning in certain mm-hmm. respects is not in totality the only thing that really makes us happy. It's very important. We've built a society in which we rely on the state for a lot of things, but again, not the only thing that okay. really moves the needle. So again, when people say they're unhappy with certain things, we need to try and understand why, what is making them unhappy. Okay. And of course, what is making them happy? We need to respect people when they tell us things and then try and find out why. Okay. Like, you know, do you take the police? Why are people unhappy with the police? You know, we've done the research. We know people feel the police are not effective at reducing crime, and people feel that the police do not treat them fairly, that they treat them very unfairly. They're very biased towards them. If those two things improved, people would be happier with the police. People would feel more secure in their neighborhoods, and we would have, in that respect, a better country.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Stephen Gordon from the Human Sciences Research Council and Professor Funden Heever from the University of the Witwatersrand. It's news time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.